Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, the growing pedophilia epidemic in the United States and the case of billionaire Jeffrey Epstein's underage girl sex operation. Also today, we'll be exploring a 60 Minutes Australia piece on pedophilia at the highest levels of the British Parliament, House of Lords, and even in the royal family. It was about a year or so ago that I watched a movie about the Catholic pedophilia scandal. It was called Spotlight. It was a true story. And what amazed me was that after a reporter, one of four working in the basement of the Boston Globe, the four individuals had their own investigative unit. One had discovered that there was a person who had come forward saying that they had been sexually molested when they were young by a Catholic priest. There was a new managing editor at the paper, and he had come from Miami, from the Miami Herald. He was not a part of the traditional Catholic business community, social community. He was Jewish. And I remember he said something to this effect: I'm not interested if this is just a case of a priest molesting a person. That's bad, but that's not what's important. Show me that this is a culture of abuse. Well, they had a hard time doing it because there were so few people willing to talk. They had doors slammed in their face. And when they would ask even people around the paper itself, they were told this isn't an issue. And then one person decided to talk. They found out that there was a literal college industry, a cottage industry catering to settling quietly, privately, settlements with people who had come forward who had been sexually abused. A year later, they ran this story. It was at the end of 2001, beginning of 2002. That then caused a rippling effect, and it went clear up to Cardinal Law in Boston, but it also did not touch the Vatican, and it should have, but that was not a part of the story. At the same time, reports began to circulate in St. Louis, in Philadelphia, Los Angeles, and people began to come forward. In all, thousands of people came forward. And it turns out that their estimates were rather conservative, that about 6% of all Catholic priests were engaged in child molestation or pedophilia. There were several problems with this. One was that in the vast majority of cases, the priests were not really punished. They were not put in jail. In fact, more often than not, the Vatican, because it is has the same power as a nation state, was able to take these pedophiles from around the world, take them through Italy, and then secretly put them into convents and other places where they could not be tracked, that was out of the jurisdiction of local communities. Here's the problem. This has been going on for decades. Indeed, if you took the time to read, you would find out it has been going on for centuries. And nothing new. It's just this was the first time people realized how endemic it was. One of the people who was helping all these pedophiles escape prosecution was Cardinal Benedict, or Ratzinger at that time. He was the most powerful cardinal, second most powerful person outside the Pope in all of the Catholic hierarchy. He was fully aware of this, and it was also under him at this time that the scandal of the Irish laundries occurred. Again, we knew nothing about this in the United States. And we would still not know anything about it. It'd still be in operation if it weren't for two of the young girls who escaped, made their way to London, went to a paper, had it exposed. And then it turns out for nearly a century, the Catholic Church had run these, well, for what would be a better word, they were prisons for girls. And you could be put in there for any reason whatsoever. And if you should manage to escape, the police would catch you and bring you back. You had no rights whatsoever. You worked 6 days a week from sunup to sunset. You're paid nothing. There was massive sexual abuse. And a lot of women spent their entire lives there and died in there. All the money from these laundries went to the Catholic Church and also into the Vatican. Again, Ratzinger ran all of that, and before him, others. And it was known clear up to the Pope. So there were no innocent people involved in the entire Catholic hierarchy. They all were complicit. But so were those people in Ireland who were not stupid. They knew who was in there and that they had these, in effect, indentured slaves doing their laundry. So shame on them. But here in the United States, we were shocked and surprised when we found out how bad it was. But it was. And it's a reality. Then we had the situation where for over 45 years, top people within the British hierarchy, and when I'm saying top people, I mean top people. The Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher, covered it up. Members of her cabinet were engaged in pedophilia. Members of the House of Lords, some of these people are still alive today. And top politicians, chiefs of police, even the top people at MI6, which is the equivalent of their CIA, were involved. So they had people to protect them, rich and famous and powerful people. Now we hear about Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein is a multi-billionaire. He has an extraordinarily extravagant lifestyle. And I am not interested in any of the salacious insights of the sex he had. He had sex with underage girls. What does concern me is that he was given a very light sentence, a sentence that a regular, non-famous, non-rich person, non-politically and personally connected person would spend a long time in prison. He did not. In fact, he was only in a out center, meaning all day long, 16 hours a day, he could go home, go to business, whatever he wanted to do. He only had to spend the nights in this, like a halfway house. But there were some extraordinarily disturbing things around his case. We're going to explore that with my guest. We will also hear from 60 Minutes Australia later on about pedophilia in England. Earlier today, in preparation for this program, I spoke with a gentleman who wrote a very damning report that no one paid attention to, no one in the media would have him on, involving the Franklin scandal, where for decades, Boys Town, the same Boys Town Spencer Tracy and I think it was Mickey Rooney starred in the movie, was used to traffic the young people out of Boys Town to wealthy, mainly Republicans, and high members of the Bush administration, even one going into the White House on a tour of one of the pedophiles, and nothing happened to them either. So we have pedophilia in the United States and Great Britain and the Catholic Church around the world, and it's a major scourge. My guest is Conchita Sarnoff. She is the executive director of the Alliance to Rescue Victims of Trafficking, which is a nonprofit organization in Washington with a mission to increase political and public awareness about human trafficking and child sex trafficking in particular. Now, a large part of the organization's work is rescuing girls between the ages of 6 and 12 in North America. She broke the story in 2010 about billionaire Jeffrey Epstein's pedophilia ring. She has been a contributor to the Financial Times, Latin American Herald Tribune, the Huffington Post, the Daily Beast, and other publications, and has appeared on NBC, Fox, ABC, Russian TV, among others. She's a graduate of Columbia University with a degree in political science and received additional work at Harvard Business School. This month, she published her book, Trafficking, which takes a hard look at the underground of sex child trafficking and highlights the case of Jeffrey Epstein, who, by the way, is very close friends and a confidant of Bill Clinton. Her websites are Conchita, that's Conchita, Sarnoff, Sarnoff.com, and ATRVT.org. Nice to have you with us today, Conchita.
Gary, thank you so very much for having me on your show. I heard everything you just said, and, you know, even though I know everything you say is accurate, it still shocks me when I hear it. only because, as you mentioned, we are living in a culture of abuse, and this is endemic. And as you pointed out, the reason that I pursued this case was primarily because the cover-up behind the Jeffrey Epstein human trafficking case was so enormous, and I'm talking from Harvard to the White House, that it astounded me. It astounded me not only because I knew Mr. Epstein and Ms. Maxwell, an alleged procurer also named in the case, but because it shocked me that that people such as that, who could possibly commit such heinous crimes against underage girls, were in my sphere of influence, or not influence, but in my social circle. I couldn't believe that I would even know people like that. So given my seven-year research into that particular case and my decade-long research into the issue of human trafficking, I realized that something had to be done because, as you well said, nothing will ever change. If we do not measure, we cannot change it. And the biggest problem, certainly one of the biggest issues that I raise in my book, Trafficking, is the fact that, as the prosecutor, R. Alex Acosta, mentioned in his letter, which I published in the Daily Beast, and I will read to you the first sentence of what he said, is he says, what followed during the Epstein investigation was a year-long assault on the prosecution and the prosecutors. I use the word assault intentionally, as the defense in this case was more aggressive than any which I or the prosecutors in my office had previously encountered. Well, what does that tell you? If a prosecutor gives someone like me, at the time acting as a reporter, I was not going to him as the executive director of my foundation, rather as a reporter. If he is willing to give me a letter that states such a claim, you know that that information is at the very least accurate. So that is what drove me to pursue, against all odds, writing this book and publish this book. I was turned down by 27 publishers. The only courageous publisher that took on my book was thebookpatch.com, Zumbaba.com, which is the publisher of my book. And as you well know, this case is so pernicious that there are still three cases pending, two in the state of Florida and one in the state of New York. And
Conchita,
yes.
I'm going to give you some overview questions, and then you're going to tell us the story so we can get all of it, as at least what you can share in this hour.
Sure.
And I'm adding two additional pieces of insight. One is that every human being should be concerned about women, women's rights, and certainly the sexual abuse against women. Right now, we are told that thousands upon thousands of service women in our armed forces are being sexually abused on a regular basis, and yet the chain of command has protected them. I watched a documentary 2 years ago about this, and nothing has happened because of all the congressional hearings. Nothing happened to the
Correct.
People who are the perpetrators. They're still in power. The culture of sexual abuse, now mind you, these are not minors, but still against women. Also, when Hillary Clinton says that she is a feminist, I don't know what kind of feminist she is. I'm a feminist. I support feminism. I've written a definitive book on feminism with one of the greatest feminists in history, Barbara Seaman. It was a 1,600-page book on For When Only. She would not rank at all. To the contrary, the women who came forward and accused her husband of rape, and not just one, many, 36 have gone on the record claiming they were sexually abused, assaulted, and raped. And instead of going to these women, offering them an opportunity to tell their story, and looking for the veracity in their claims, there was a group put together that she, at the instructions of Hillary Clinton, to go after these women, to discredit them, to destroy their reputations, so none of this would impact her her husband's opportunity to become president. Now, because they were co-presidents, everything that was happening to him, including his 13 to 15-year affair with Jennifer Flowers and his other long-term affairs, she was fully aware of that. And the women that I know, the women who I respect, who are spiritual feminists, would never tolerate a serial abuser in their lives. Long ago, those people would have been finding another relationship. But then to attack the victims, and that reminds me of what I was told today, that when the young kids from Boys Town were asked to testify to a grand jury, they were attacked by the FBI. In fact, they were told to recant their stories, and when they didn't, then they were charged with perjury, and two of them refused to recant the abuses that have happened to them, the rape that happened to them by these powerful Republicans, and they both went to jail. So, A, they were raped as children by powerful Republicans in the Bush administration and Washington inside circle. Then when they were given an opportunity before a grand jury to tell the truth, they were charged again because nobody wanted that information to get out. Now, we had the third most powerful man in Congress, Hazard, who is the Speaker of the House. He is a known pedophile, and it turns out that the FBI knew that he was a pedophile when he was head of the House of Representatives, when he was Speaker of the House. So here we have the most powerful people. Now we have Hillary saying she's for women, and an awful lot of the Democrat, liberal, corporate establishment is protecting Bill Clinton from any exposure. So Bill Clinton is up to his eyeballs in this scandal, and I want you to go through that, because if it comes out that he was involved in any of this, and they're attacking the people who are going to tell that truth, then that should be made public, and she should be asked to account for that. And again, how many betrayals do we accept before we see a person has no moral fortitude and has no business being one of the most powerful people in the world? So that is the form I want you to spend the rest of the program talking about. Take us through Epstein, what happened, who was involved, name the names, what are the allegations, and what then happened that shows you a bizarre concept of justice when it came to his sentencing. The form is yours.
Thank you, Gary. Well, I will begin by saying that a victim placed the former president in Epstein's Island in a sworn deposition. This victim, who self-identified, I had originally identified her as Jane Doe 102, but she sold her story and therefore came forward and exposed her identity. Her name is Virginia Louise Roberts, who is now going under her married name, Giuffre, G-I-U-F-F-R-E. She claims in a sworn deposition that the former president was on Epstein's plane and was on Epstein's island in the USVI, that is the United States Virgin Islands. And she also makes a claim that Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein and two underage girls were there, present, with the former president and herself and Mr. Epstein and Miss Maxwell. So the question is, if in fact that is true, why wouldn't the former president come forward at least as a material witness to defend himself? That is a big question, specifically because his wife is running for the White House, and because of his history, and because the former president was impeached, and because of the Lewinsky scandal, and because of all the other sexual scandals that have surrounded the former president since the beginning of his term as president of the United States. So that is how Mr. Clinton, and then I'm going to circle back and now answer some of your questions. The story begins a little earlier, as you can imagine. Mr. Epstein is a Wall Street billionaire, hedge fund manager who managed at the time. He first worked for Bear Stearns. He was fired from Bear Stearns for a Reg D violation, which is insider's information, trading on inside information. So he's fired by Bear Stearns, and he meets a man by the name of Leslie Wexner. Mr. Wexner is a reputable businessman. He actually founded The Limited, which now goes under the name L Brands, and he lives in New Albany, Ohio. Mr. Wexner becomes a close friend and a client of Mr. Epstein, and according to records, he invests a great deal of money, approximately $1 billion, and Mr. Epstein begins to manage his money. At approximately the same time, or maybe a little later, he meets Miss Maxwell. Ghislaine Maxwell is the daughter of the late Robert Maxwell, who was a member of Parliament in England. She's a socialite, but her father was actually not only in government, he also, they say, belonged to the Mossad. He died in a very mysterious way, and he started Maxwell Communications, and an enormous media industry in the UK. His two sons were also arrested and almost went to jail because, according to media reports, the father plummeted through the pension funds of his employees. So Miss Maxwell came to the United States, met Mr. Epstein, and basically gave him an entree into her social world that he never had. Even though he had the money, and she did not at the time, she had many, many relationships with people in very high places. One of them happened to be Prince Andrew, fifth in line to the British throne. And through Miss Maxwell, Mr. Epstein befriended not only President Clinton, but also befriended Prince Andrew. And through Miss Maxwell, according to the victims and according to many sworn affidavits, she helped organize and she had the victims and she had other procurers come and solicit underage girls for Mr. Maxwell. Well, this happened, obviously it occurred over a period of years, until one day in 2005, one girl came forward at the behest of her parents. Her parents found out through a telephone call that obviously they were not supposed to be listening in on, and they went to the police, the Palm Beach police. And the chief of police at the time, Mr. Michael Ritter, after he interviewed many, many victims and several of the procurers, decided that this was not a state case, that this was too big, and it should be a federal case. Well, he takes it to the state, and therein begins a two-year federal investigation. And it is during that time that we see how far up the chain this abuse actually extended. Because not only do we now see a whole new cast of characters, that is, politicians and entertainers and celebrities and opinion leaders, but we see that some of these girls, including that one particular, Virginia Louise Roberts, claims that she was forced or she was influenced to perform sexual massages on several of Mr. Epstein's highly influential friends. And that's when she places the former president on the island. I was also told by a source who I cannot identify that it was Mr. Epstein who gave President Clinton the original funds to start the Clinton Global Initiative, which is why one of Epstein's attorneys actually states in one of the depositions that Mr. Epstein supported President Clinton's foundation because he was one of the original investors. And surely enough, Miss Maxwell was one of the few guests who attended Chelsea Clinton's wedding. And this was after Epstein's arrest, and this was after his indictment. So if, in fact, President Clinton was concerned, why would they invite Ghislaine Maxwell to their daughter's wedding? I mean, this is, we all believe, a holy occasion. So that is certainly not an occasion to invite someone who has been implicated in such a scandalous ordeal, or certainly implicated in a crime against children. Now, the people behind this, you know, Mr. Epstein has a great deal of money, and therefore he has been able to hire a group of very powerful, very prominent attorneys. I believe you know the names. Some of them include Mr. Professor Alan Dershowitz from Harvard University, Mr. Gerald Lefcourt, Kenneth Starr, who was the Solicitor General during Clinton's the Monica Lewinsky scandal, Martin Weinberger, Roy Black, and many others. And so throughout this 10, 11-year case, Mr. Epstein has had the wherewithal, the time and the resources to ensure that every single case has been somewhat controlled, not only by his attorneys, but has been manipulated to ensure his safety. Mr. Epstein went to jail, served only 13 months. His case, Gary, has set precedent. I will tell you why. Since he was arrested and since his non-prosecution agreement was signed, several other human traffickers who were charged with similar crimes in the state of Florida have come forward and have requested, their attorneys have requested, that they be given the same sentencing as Mr. Epstein. Why is that? Because according to the attorneys, according to one particular attorney, Mr. Joel DeFabio, who is currently representing a gentleman by the name of Archangel Michael Hernandez, a Hispanic male, clearly not with the resources that Mr. Epstein has, but who was charged with similar crimes and with crimes against women, not so much children, not so much underage girls. This man is asking for the same sentence. Well, guess what? He's not getting it. Why is he not getting it? Is it because he has no political affiliations? Is it because he doesn't have the finances that Mr. Epstein has? Is it because he cannot hire the type of attorneys that Mr. Epstein has had for the past 10 plus years? Could be. That could be the answer. However, because Mr. Epstein's case has set precedent, it now remains in the law books. And so when any other human trafficker in the state of Florida gets arrested on similar crimes, they can go back and use his case. And that is one of the biggest problems. There are many more problems, obviously, with this case. The case hasn't settled. Mr. Dershowitz settled, forgive me, when Mr. Dershowitz was implicated in the case, again, Virginia Louise Roberts implicated Mr. Dershowitz, accusing him of sexually molesting her six times. Mr. Dershowitz settled the case. We need to ask ourselves why. Why was the victims, during the non-prosecution agreement, why was the victim identified as a prostitute? And why was she not identified as a victim as she should have been? It's very interesting, and I don't know if you've ever watched this, but Joseph Campbell, he was a director of criminal investigations for the FBI, he is a director for the FBI, gave a very interesting interview last year for the BBC, and I believe the interview is online. And one of the things that he claims in that interview is that this is endemic, that we have the highest, in the United States, the highest percentage of pedophiles and child sex abuse in the world. And with that, I wanted to read you some statistics that I have that basically, it's just a quick sentence here, but so you will understand what we're facing. In the year 2010, 87, this is 2010, that's 6 years ago, 87.6 of the arrests of the convicted felons for offenses of who distributed and transported child pornography, 87.6 were white, 3.6 were black, 6.7% were Hispanic, and the other, and 2.2% were other. 97.7% were U.S. citizens. Only 2.3% were non-U.S. citizens. And of course, the male was 99.4% of the total population. Now that's outstanding, and that's only 2010, because most of these statistics are not updated as frequently as they should be, because nobody funds the collection of data, and that is an enormous issue that we have today. We must find ways in which the government can fund the need for data. Why? Because of five elements. Number one, data frames the issue. It also pursues public policy. It allows for better investigations. And finally, it achieves higher and better prosecutions. So,
Conchita, I need to go a little deeper into this.
Yes.
Right now, Bill Cosby is on the hot spot. For 40 years, he was able to allegedly sexually abuse women, not underage women, but women by drugging them and then having sex with them.
Yes.
And everyone is rightly concerned about that and outraged. And yet, you have Bill Clinton, who has bragged to one of his former women that he had a 15-year affair with, including while he was married, and the state troopers, guards, when he was Arkansas governor. All this was known. This was not a secret. I've spoken with people from Little Rock who were part of the culture, including one of the people who was closest to him. Everyone knew this. There were no secrets. And he bragged to this lawyer, this woman lawyer, that he had over 2,000 sexual conquests up till that point. We're talking about before he became president, 2,000. So whatever Bill Cosby did, Bill Clinton did a whole lot more, and yet not a word in the media about this, not a word to challenge him when he's getting all these gigantic lecture fees and is going to be the co-president. And yet this goes to the very heart of a person's character and the capacity to make moral judgments. Now, in this case, this Epstein case, I watched recently on Good Morning America where Matt Bauer was interviewing the attorney in this case who was defending, who had defended Epstein, Alan Dershowitz. And Dershowitz was adamant that he had not done anything wrong, that the lawyers should be disbarred who brought this, that he was going to cause them to be disbarred, and he was going after him, that anyone suggested he was involved would also be sued. And is that what you would expect is a normal thing for someone who is very famous, an outstanding attorney, had an impeccable reputation, now to find himself at the center of these allegations by this young woman? Tell us about that. And is there, what have you found out about his going after the lawyers who I understand are themselves, who are bringing the case on behalf of this woman, a former federal prosecutor, and people who have an outstanding reputations? This should be an interesting contest.
Absolutely, Gary. Well, I certainly want you to read some of this in the book. That's why I wrote the book. But and you will find out a lot of information in trafficking and who did what to who and why and where and how deep this goes.
But tell
so
us that
I'm not
now
give it all
and
away.
Give people the opportunity to hear the best that you have. Then
absolutely.
They can make the decision about purchasing your book.
Absolutely. I will give you, I think, a good summary of what I think, of course, is important and what compelled me to spend 7 years pursuing the publication of this book. So, Mr. Dershowitz, Professor Dershowitz, in my opinion, should not have settled. And I say that because I agree with you. A man who has had such a formidable career as Professor Dershowitz, who's renowned the world over for his, you know, brilliant litigation skills and for the many cases that he has handled, When a young girl, such as Virginia Louise Roberts, comes forward and without the same impeccable history and reputation and claims that he sexually abused her, not once, but six times, and two attorneys, beginning with a former federal judge, Paul Cassell, that is, and Brad Edwards, if indeed what she claims is untrue, why would he not fight that? I mean, I certainly would. He, in his deposition, which I wrote part of the deposition, I included part of it in the book, he said that he had, and it took over four pages of his deposition, to name all the attorneys who he hired to represent him. I mean, that's four pages worth of names of attorneys who came forward to represent Professor Dershowitz. If he was so adamant about protecting that legacy and protecting his reputation, and most of all, at his age, protecting his marriage, why would he settle? Why didn't he fight this to the bitter end? Why didn't he sue those two attorneys and try to disbar them? I think I would have done that. Again, I'm not Professor Dershowitz, but I think I would have done that.
He is not suing them, and we do not know his innocence or guilt. It is merely the challenge that his accuser has made. So until such time that it is proven that he is innocent or guilty, we must give him the advantage of benefit of being innocent.
No, but the case is settled. The case was settled, Gary. The case was settled, and he settled the case. And it was settled on April 8th, 2016. So it's finished. That case is finished. It's not coming forward. And now they're trying
to... How was it settled?
Well, Mr. Dershowitz came forward and settled and offered a settlement agreement. And the case was settled. So it means that it's finished. That case is over and done with. Mr. Dershowitz is not going to receive... You know, there's not going to be any more discussion. Nobody's going to court anymore. And it's a settled case. It's done and over with. And that happened on April 8th.
When I saw that Matt Lauer, Good Morning America piece, was that before the settlement?
It might have been. It might have been. It might have been. But I know, I mean, I will give you, I will happily send you all the documents. The case was settled on April 8th, and Vivia Chan from The American Lawyer, a very witty witty reporter and a lawyer herself, actually interviewed Mr. Dershowitz. Mr. Dershowitz would not take my calls. I called him several times throughout that case, but he never returned my calls. And she wrote a very interesting article that you, at one point you should read about why Professor Dershowitz might have settled the case. So that case is finished, not moving forward. The other cases that are pending are, of course, the two Florida cases and the New York case of the victim, the same victim, Virginia Louise Roberts, versus Ghislaine Maxwell. Those are the only three cases pending right now.
Now, the two cases in Florida, are one of those against Prince Andrew?
No, none of the cases. Prince Andrew was also implicated by Miss Roberts because she claimed that Miss Maxwell introduced her to the prince and they flew to London together, Miss Maxwell, Mr. Epstein, and Virginia. Miss Roberts stayed at Miss Maxwell's flat in London and she was paid, according to the girl, to the victim, $15,000 by Mr. Epstein to service Prince Andrew. As you know, Buckingham Palace has spoken. They have also denied that. Vehemently, they've denied it. Prince Andrew spoke about it at Davos, at the World Economic Forum. He actually organized a private conference, a news conference, about the issue, also denying those allegations. And so at this point, Prince Andrew is not required to come to the United States to either be a material witness, and certainly in the cases that are pending, he might be implicated in the Ghislaine Maxwell case, the defamation case, because that actually reverts back to the original. This is a very complicated case, as you can imagine. It's, you know, 11 years long, and it involves many, many people and many moving parts. So the New York case, which is the defamation case that is ongoing, implicates Prince Andrew, but it certainly will not hold him as material witness. I will not call him as a material witness. And I understand that Ms. Maxwell's attorneys have asked for those documents to be sealed. So no one can actually see what Ms. Maxwell said in her deposition, because they're sealed documents, like many of Mr. Epstein's documents are sealed.
Conchita, we were led to believe that on at least five occasions, former President Bill Clinton did not travel with his Secret Service detail that he is required to travel with when it came time to going with Epstein to his private island, and also on his plane, which was called, what, the Lolita something?
Well, I don't know what, you know, that's a nickname that the media has given the jet. I don't think the jet was ever named that.
But isn't that an important issue to bring, ask the president, the former president, to come forward and just ask them, did you attend these orgies? Did you at any time observe or engage in any sex with any underage women? No one's going to ask him that, and of course he's not going to ever admit it, but I think the public should know that, not because he's just a private citizen now, but because he's one of those powerful people in the world, and his wife could very easily become president, which means he would be once again co-president, and if they engage in those activities while his wife was Secretary of State and campaigning for president, what does that foretell for what he might do when he's back in the White House again?
Well, I think, Gary, that is, you made the point. The point is this: if, in fact, what the victim claims is true, if, in fact, that is true, then I would think that it would be in the best interest of President Clinton to come forward as a material witness and simply answer just one question. Was he, in fact, on that island with Mr. Epstein, Ms. Maxwell, Ms. Roberts, and the other two underage girls? That one question alone. And by the way, that does not mean that he did anything illegal or did anything wrong. That is not what I'm implying, because he might not have. He might have been there, and he might just have been a visitor and stayed at one of the five villas that Mr. Epstein has on his private island, and not had anything to do with any of the girls. He might have just stayed there. I mean, that could have happened.
And he might never have inhaled either.
Exactly. But as someone who is almost assuredly about to return to the White House, I would think that the American public would want to ensure that we have absolutely no reason to fear that the person in the White House could possibly be considered a pedophile or someone who has scandals, not just with women, adult consensual women, but that possibly might have done something incorrect with a minor. I mean, I think that's the one question possibly he should come forward and answer. Was he at that island?
Conchita, I'd like for you to hold your thoughts for a moment, because I want to play just a brief part of this outstanding 60 Minutes Australia piece looking at pedophilia at the highest levels in British society, from the BBC, where there was a rapist who sexually molested over 500 people, and they knew about it. People inside knew about it. And all throughout the entire British establishment. Let's listen now.
Without question, the biggest political scandal Britain has ever faced will be exposed tonight. It involves a secret network of the highest office holders in the land, past and current members of Parliament, cabinet ministers, judges, diplomats, even one of the country's top spies. These men are accused of some of the most sadistic child sexual abuse imaginable on hundreds of victims, some as young as 8. More confronting still are claims that children were killed in order to protect this network of predators, including one boy whose father worked at the Australian High Commission in London. For over 40 years, the evil child predators acted with complete impunity, hiding behind the facade of respectability. But no longer.
They were children, often the most vulnerable, placed in the care of the state only to be betrayed, systematically trafficked to the most powerful men in the land.
How many times were you raped?
Wow. Maybe twice, 3 times a week.
Boys and girls both, farmed out to pedophiles like throwaway toys.
There would be a group of girls and a group of men, and the men would basically single out the girls.
Tonight, 3 victims speak out. Claims of a monumental cover-up. That children were murdered. One of them, the 15-year-old son of the Australian High Commissioner's chauffeur.
I just said to him that I think he's been taken by someone high up.
And what did that senior policeman say to you?
He said to me, you keep saying things like that, you could get hurt.
And the secret pedophile brotherhood, who to this day demand their right to have sex with children.
What constitutes consent?
The willing involvement of a child. It's really quite simple.
A sex scandal at the very highest levels of the British establishment. Child sexual abuse victims come forward to point the finger at very powerful men. Serving members of the British Parliament, cabinet ministers, lords, spies, even senior police, incriminated in a VIP pedophile ring for the privileged and powerful.
It happened to me, it happened to others, and why would it go on for so long? Why didn't somebody just step in and say, we need to investigate this?
Richard Kerr is now 54 and a clearly damaged man. His life began to fall apart when at the age of 9 he was sent to the now infamous Kincora Boys Home in Northern Ireland, run by men who would later be convicted of the frequent rape of children in their care.
How soon did the abuse start when you were sent there?
A week later, maybe.
Within a few years, Richard and other boys from the home were being trafficked around the country.
You were brought across essentially to be playthings for pedophiles in England.
Boy toys. I felt afraid to say no. As long as I perform well, they said they'd take care of me.
So when you first came to London, Richard, what was the first place you were brought to?
The first place? I was taken to Dolphin Square.
Today, Richard Kerr is bringing us back to the place where he was taken to meet the men who ruled the country. An upmarket apartment complex called Dolphin Square, just minutes from the Houses of Parliament.
What happened in here, Richard?
What happened in here? I was taken in here. I was told to sit down on the bed, and he started to take my clothes off.
Still hurts, doesn't it?
Of course it hurts. I've never forget. It hurts.
Richard was brought here to have sex with politicians and other high-ranking members of the British establishment, including members of the House of Lords.
Are any of them still in the Parliament?
Older, very old, lords.
Richard was one of dozens of boys and girls, almost all from state institutions, brought to the homes of the rich and powerful to be forced into sex with adults.
My soul at the time was being destroyed. And they took away everything I had. Everything I had.
British police are now investigating compelling evidence that dozens of children suffered similar fates.
I am Mr. Baker. I am age 11.
The happy smile hides a terrible secret. When this video was taken of 11-year-old Esther Baker, she had already been sexually abused for years.
At the age of six, a family member took you to other pedophiles.
This is just a part of a long piece on the 60 Minutes Australia on exposing it. For those of us who've investigated these sex crimes, we find that it's not isolated to one country or to one set of people. You could find sex trafficking all over the world, in the Middle East in particular, in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Qatar, United Arab Emirates, the rich and the powerful, they can do pretty much whatever they want, and at no point will they be challenged because of how important they are politically and economically to American interests. Could you give us your insight as to what you see happening when there is sexual abuse, there is pedophilia, there is trafficking and sex slavery, and yet when it's someone powerful, when it's someone who has friends in important places or is important to the United States, Conchita, nothing is said about it. It does not come up on any discussions.
Absolutely. It was painful to hear that, Gary. It was, as much as I have heard many, many horrific cases throughout my decade-long work in the field of human trafficking, I must tell you that radio show you just played, was that taping, was just quite horrific. It just never ceases to amaze me how painful it is to hear stories like this, because what pedophiles don't understand, what men and maybe some women of influence who abuse children don't understand, is that it is not the 30-second act or the 10-minute act. It is an act that destroys the child's life forever. And as you know, Nick Kristof from the New York Times wrote an article. He blogged. He didn't actually write the article. He blogged about Dylan Farrow, Woody Allen's daughter, who accused her father of sexually molesting her. And, of course, Mr. Allen denied it, and the case has gone absolutely nowhere. But when I asked several reporters how they felt about that story, about Miss Allen's story, Dylan Allen's story, they all responded to me that they believed her, that they believed that she was telling the truth. And here she is, a child of one of the most famous producers, directors, writers in Hollywood. You know what just happened, or maybe you might have just seen what Elijah Wood, the famous child actor who was Harry Potter, what he wrote in the Sunday Times in England, which was that Hollywood, is in an epidemic of child sexual abuse, that there is an epidemic in Hollywood with this issue. Now, how would he know that, and why would he say that to an English newspaper instead of saying that story to an American newspaper? Clearly, because American newspapers will not print it. That's number one. Number two, because he might have felt more protected over there than in the United States for saying that. Maybe, maybe not. And number three, that story has very long legs, because I'm sure, like he mentioned in that story, it was his mother who protected him from these powerful pedophiles in Hollywood. It was his mother who prevented him from going to the parties, because she was more interested in raising a good human being than she was interested in making a child star out of her son. So we have to follow these stories, and we have to really give importance and weight, and there must be federal investigations to these children who come from powerful families or who are in positions of power because of their inheritance or resources or positions. And we must investigate, because if we do not investigate, we will never stop this. Maybe this will never stop, Gary. Maybe we will never, maybe child sex trafficking will never end. I don't know, but certainly we can make a difference. You can make a difference. I can make a difference, no matter how small. And when there's enough water clinging upon a rock, that rock dissolves. And that's what we need to do. We need to be the droplets of water onto the rock, so this issue can stop.
I agree. Well, that's why we're doing this program. These are not the kind of programs I enjoy doing, but I feel they must be done, especially when I see so many women coming forward claiming they were sexually abused and molested and raped. And instead of people being outraged by this and asking for independent investigations and then challenging Clinton and Epstein and others, it seems though if you have enough money, you buy yourself a lot of plausible deniability. Thank you very much, Conchita Sarnoff, for your work, for your new book called Trafficking. People can go to her website, ConchitaSarnoff.com. I'm Gary Noll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sounds there, standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Who are people gonna rise up, get their share? Who are people gonna rise up and take what's theirs?